Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello. I am so delighted you're joining me at my broadcasting table this evening because we are going to be taking a very interesting journey, I think, via the magic of technology. And that journey is engaging a gentleman who has a home in Thailand and his background and experience in Thai massage. If you've never heard of it, I'm not familiar with it. So I've gotten an education, and I hope we're going to be sharing some very interesting information with you as well. My guest is Bob Haddad, and he has been engaged in Thai massage for a very, very long time. He also has in the past been a language teacher, a musician, a music producer. Let's find out how he became involved with this unique and beautiful culture of Thailand and what engaged him to get involved in a lifelong dedication to Thai massage. Hello, Bob. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna, and hello, everybody.
Bob, Thai tradition. You are an American, I'm assuming, and this is something that you became involved with it? Did it come about because of being engaged in music? Were you traveling internationally? How is it that you went from being so engaged in music into massage, especially the Thai massage?
Well, that's an interesting journey. I did own a record company called Music of the World. I specialized in traditional world music or ethnic music, indigenous music from different cultures around the world. And I don't know if you folks recall the whole beginning of the demise of the recording industry back in the late 90s when the illegal file sharing started happening, particularly with one company called Napster. Well, Napster really kind of messed up a lot of people in the recording industry, distributors, record labels, artists, and in a short period of time, this CD sales started to decline, and as a result, I was faced with, employees and a business and having financially hard times. So I tried to sell the masters of my record label, and I was very successful in selling to an emerging .com who offered the first legal alternative to the illegal file sharing that was decimating the recording industry. So I got out of the record business and got out of debt and paid my employees, and I scratched my head and wondered, what am I going to do with my life? I was, I think, 48 at the time. And I decided to go take a trip to Asia to find myself, so to speak. And I, after traveling to one or two countries for short periods of time, I wound up in Thailand and went to the north of Thailand to the city of Chiang Mai, which is the second largest city and a beautiful place. And as I walked through the streets, you know, people in their shops would be outside and say, "Massage, mister, you want a massage?" And what is this Thai massage thing? And so, yeah, sure, you know, $5 for, you know, for an hour and a half Thai massage. Thai massage is done with clothing on, with light clothing. It's not done on a table. You don't have to remove your clothes. There's no rubbing with oils. It's a combination of pressure along energy lines and parts of your body and assisted stretching or assisted yoga. So anyway, make a long story short, I started, ooh, this stuff feels really good. I'm going to, oh, you come back now, tomorrow. And I tried different therapists over a period of a week or two. And then I just thought, what am I doing with my life? What the heck? Let me take a course. And that was how the whole thing began. The universe just kind of put it in my hands, and I kind of went with it. So I went back to Thailand several times that year, met my first mentor, and then I was hooked. Every year for many, many years after that, I'd go back and study for a month or two at a time. And after about maybe 2 years or so, I opened a professional practice here in North Carolina, where I lived. And then a year or two after that, I began to teach. And since then, I've had about a 24, 25-year career in teaching courses to therapists around the world. I have traveled internationally and taught many, many places. And I'm the author of two books on the topic. But, of course, COVID has changed a lot of that. In-person learning has been reduced quite a bit. So now it's just beginning to emerge again. And I'll be hitting the road again this fall. And I'm looking forward to getting back to my regular teaching schedule.
Oh, I can imagine. Yes, teaching with the environment of a live audience, you know, your students right there, it makes all the difference in the world. I don't care what anybody says. I appreciate the Zoom technology, but there is that contact with the teacher and the hands-on learning, if you will, that makes all the difference in the world. Now, you had a number of different teachers, but you also have founded the Thai Healing Alliance International. When did you found that?
That was about 2004. And that came about as a result of my noticing a lot of people after I had been studying repeatedly with my teachers in Thailand and elsewhere for about 4 years. I started to observe the body mechanics and the sort of energetic perspective of some of the students who were coming from around the world to learn in Thailand. And I don't know, they just seemed to be so stuck in the actual techniques and the sequences that their teachers were teaching them that they weren't paying adequate attention to the client, to the way the person was breathing, for example, in order to execute techniques. It's very important to have breath awareness, obviously. I don't want to push, compress into your stomach, for example, if you were taking an inhale. That would be counterproductive. I want to press into your stomach and work in your abdomen as you're exhaling, because that would allow me to get, it would be more comfortable for you, and it would allow me to get in to the places that I want rather than compete with your inhalation. And I was noticing things like that with people who had been studying for, you know, a long time. And I thought, my goodness, these people don't have the awareness that my teachers have taught me to have. And so I consulted with a number of my colleagues, two colleagues of mine that were students of my first mentor, my second mentor, actually. And we came to this understanding. We had lunch together, and I said, what would you think if I tried to do this? And I wrote some things down on a napkin. I remember, I kind of wish I had that napkin. But we took some notes on a napkin at the restaurant. And with that, I started to rally the folks that I knew and went back to Thailand. And so that turned into an international organization where at one point we had upwards of 4,000 members who were students in 20-something countries. And, of course, that has evolved over the years, too. Now it is less of a member officiating, organization and more of an international clearinghouse of information for traditional Thai healing arts and Thai massage and Theravada Buddhism, which is the type of Buddhism that's practiced there. And there's a whole big section on travel tips to Thailand and, you know, tourist places and Thai language, Thai customs. So I'm very, very proud that I've been able to do that. I did it all for nothing. I started a nonprofit corporation, it's just a really, really wonderful. I feel like all the volunteers have helped to leave this gift for the general public, a resource. It's the largest online library of information about traditional Thai healing arts in the world. There's nowhere else. There's over 700 entries ranging from individual, you know, magazine articles and press to, you know, dissertations, you know, research, you know, comparative research between Western medicine as opposed to Eastern medicine systems, that kind of thing.
Now, you've just brought up a point. There's a difference in many of the yogic, Ayurvedic, Chinese positionings of understanding and working with the body with massage. Now, the history, which I found extremely interesting, is nobody really knows where Thai massage came from. Is that correct?
Well, We do believe and have some reason to understand that it has very strong roots in Ayurvedic medicine, Indian Ayurvedic medicine, that was probably spread after, who knows, how many hundreds or even a thousand years after the Buddha died. The Buddha was about 500 years older than Jesus, you know, so we're talking 2,600 years ago. At some point over the centuries, a few centuries after his death, we do know that monks began to travel to spread the word of the Buddha. And, of course, the Buddha was from India originally. And so it is believed that somehow in that process, Ayurvedic medicine or information about, you know, the elements, you know, the four major elements, that, or sometimes in other cultures more than four, that are believed to achieve balance in your body, fire, earth, water, and wind, that kind of stuff. We all have those elements, but some of us have exaggerated or elevated fire, and those are the people who get angry easily. And we sometimes have elevated wind, and that's when you forget where you left your keys and you know, that kind of stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that now whether or not that knowledge was already in Siam, in ancient Thailand, is unknown. But what we do believe is that there was some definite influence from Buddhist medicine, early Buddhist medicine, into Thailand that concurred with the spread of the word of the Buddha, what the Buddha was saying about peace and love and inner happiness and suffering and, you know, all of that stuff. And that's pretty much all we know. We do know the historical changes that happened right around from about the 14th, 15th century onward. There are documents of ancient Thai pressure points and stuff like that. They do not correlate exactly to the Indian Ayurvedic marmas and nadis, which is what they're called in Ayurvedic medicine. They do not correspond identically to the Chinese meridians. But the concept is the same. You know, we have energy sort of channels through our body, we're not just blood and bones. You know, the Eastern people, the way they look at health, it's a very holistic system versus, in some cases, in many cases, Western medicine, where it's, oh, you need a surgery here, and, you know, oh, let's press on this area. This Western massage therapist will find a muscle that's tight and will work, for the most part, very much in that area. Whereas in Eastern systems, it's, okay, why is that muscle tight? Is there something else that's going on? If you're having a tightness in your shoulder, could that be related to your leg? You know, and so there's a lot more curiosity in exploring the holistic aspect of dis-ease, hyphenated disease, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and that can be a physical dis-ease, it can be an emotional dis-ease, it can be a spiritual dis-ease. And so that's what I see as one of the main differences between the way healing and medicine is perceived in the East and the way it has been perceived in the West.
Yes, and fortunately, more and more in Western culture, we are bringing the two together.
Yes.
And I think that it has a natural harmonic, but it's sometimes a challenge for people that have been educated in the Western environment to have an attitude of we know it all, and that's far from the truth. So I think the blending of the two is absolutely wonderful, and it for those that have gone into medicine and have studied in the Western environment and have also flowed in the Eastern understandings, it has made a difference when they work with people. It just makes a tremendous difference. Now, there were kings, and your book, which is titled The Art of Thai Massage. Now, this book particularly is oriented towards advanced therapeutic practice, but you include so much history in this book, and I found it just really interesting. And there was a beginning of kings. Now, there were wars in Thailand. What place on this earth has not been affected by wars? I don't know of one. King Rama I established the capital in Bangkok, and then there were temples, and Thailand is known for its exquisite temples. I mean, they're just absolutely gorgeous. The artistry of the people is breathtaking. It just really is. So let's take that time frame forward, because it went from being really very supportive of the medicinal practices that were utilized into the extreme opposite. This was something that had occurred in what time frame?
Well, I don't know exactly which time frame. There were several big shifts in the way medicine was perceived and practiced. But certainly right around the turn of the century, 1900s, the 20s, around there, 20s and 30s, there was a big push in Siam, which is what Thailand was called before, whenever they changed the name. I think it was in the 50s or something, the 40s, where they changed the name from Siam to, remember that play, The King of Siam?
Oh, yes.
There was, when it was Siam, and in the 20s or 30s, I don't have the exact date here in front of me, they began to push for westernization of Thailand in ways that were being influenced by, for example, the French people who had a strong presence, colonial presence in Thailand. Now, I do want to say that Thailand is, I think, one of the only or the only country in Southeast Asia that consistently resisted colonialism. The French tried to occupy it. They kicked them out. The British, you know, and so they've remained fiercely independent this whole time. But there was a lot of influence from the West, smoking a fine cigar, sipping brandy. You know, the elite in Thailand around the turn of the century started to think, oh, that's cool. So they started, and the government, in particular the king and the people in control, tried to emphasize westernization because they wanted to open up more relations with the West. And as a result of that, there was a period of time where they banned traditional healing arts. Even traditional music was suppressed. Traditional musicians were confiscated, and musicians were put in jail and all of that stuff. They weren't allowed to play traditional Thai music anymore. They had to listen to Mozart and play the piano, and, you know, that kind of thing. So that energy that was happening in that time period also had some effect on the healing arts and on traditional Thai medicine. So when the capital shifted from Ayutthaya to Bangkok, they built the temples in Bangkok, and at that time, we have some records of tracing of the energy lines that were being perceived and practiced at that time. And those epigraphs, you know, etchings on stone. And those epigraphs are still preserved in one of the temples in Bangkok, and it's a tourist attraction now. You can go and see. But that is by no means a complete representation. That is all we were left with by 1920. We don't really have, we have some codices from earlier before that. But because of one of the wars, the warring period that you alluded to before, mostly between Burma and ancient Siam, a lot of the original texts and codices of medical texts were burned when these temples and places were sacked by the invading Burmese troops. And so all of that information was lost. And as a result of that loss, this king ordered that some of the remaining fragments of the medical codices be engraved onto stone so they could never be burned. And so that is, I think, what you're alluding to in that particular instance.
Who was the father doctor? You have quite a write-up about him. Shivaka?
Yes, yes. Jivaka Kumarabacha was an Indian. He's mentioned in the ancient Buddhist texts as being the Buddha's physician. He treated the Buddha for different ailments and that kind of stuff. He's written up in a lot of the Buddhist texts, even the ones that are available in Chinese language and in Japan and in Korea, you know, in Tibet, you know, not only the Indian codices, but the ancient Buddhist texts that appeared in all of the early Buddhist cultures. He has different names, you know, the Chinese, you know, rendition call him a different name, but it's the same guy. And he is believed to have treated the Buddha and been his personal physician. He was also a surgeon who is documented as having done surgical procedures to kings and queens and, you know, well-known people. And he is revered in Thailand as sort of the ancestor spirit of healing arts. Now, why this guy wearing an Indian, you know, toga, you know, with his hair tied up in a bun like the ancient Indians used to do? He's obviously not Southeast Asian. You know, he doesn't have the same looks, but he is revered as the ancestor spirit, the intervening spirit to channel good healing energy during any kind of medicine, traditional medicine treatment. And in Thai massage parlors in Thailand and in practice salons, in most serious Thai massage therapists' practice rooms, it's a custom to have an image of Jivaka, whether a little statue or a painting or something, as a way to invoke his spirit when you're engaging in healing arts.
The attitude towards healing is a very significant one, and it is one that I think, my goodness, just with conversations I've had with people recently in the Western world of medicine, is so significant. You have a translation, and I'm going to read it. I pay homage with my head to Jivaka. With compassion for all beings, he has brought us divine medicine. And I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Shines as brightly as the sun and the moon. I pay respect to the great Pandit, to the wise one. May there be happiness and freedom from illness. I revere the one who is adored by devas, by humans, and by Brahma. The one who is adored by Nagas and by heavenly beings. The one who is of pure facilities. Or faculties, excuse me. May all illness and disease be healed. Now, I've read this. This is the English translation. You have the Thai language in, you know, just before this particular segment in your book. But the emphasis is that you go into a state of meditation and you repeat this, and this is to center you so that you are going to give attention in the right way to the person that you're going to be serving the healing to. And I thought, this is really a very profound statement, and it's one that is typically taught in the schools.
Yes, it is, and serious practitioners can choose to incorporate it silently. As they're preparing, for example, I, in my work with my clients, I always do what's called a Y Kru, and the Y Kru is a greeting to the teacher. Kru is the Thai translation of the word guru. And and just to be clear, you mentioned that it's translated into Thai. It's actually mostly in Pali, which is an ancient language before Sanskrit. It's a proto-Sanskrit language. So people and scholars still know how to speak it and know how to decipher it. It's kind of like the Latin of the Buddhist world, if you will. Mm-hmm. But speckled in that little prayer or invocation is more apt, are some Thai words too. So it's kind of a syncretic thing between ancient, you know, Buddhist language and some Thai words mixed in there. And it is used as a supplication. Again, he's not a god. It's not like asking him to, you know, do anything. It's just invoking his guidance and his wisdom, because he was the guy that treated the Buddha. He donated land. He was quite wealthy, apparently, according to the texts. And he donated a big parcel of land and built the first monastery for the Buddha and his followers to live in, the first order of monks, so to speak. And I have been to that place. I did a pilgrimage to this little town in India, and I tell you, it was so important for me to actually be there and to do a little sort of ceremony and to recite this Y Kru, or this mantra, while I was on this holy land. So yes, it is a prayer of supplication, and in classes in Thailand, and even when I teach my courses in Europe and the United States and Latin America and Canada, I, you know, my students will either repeat this or they will listen to me quietly repeat it. And then we'll take a moment of meditation to be still and empty. Maybe before that, even do a little yoga to make sure that we're loose. How is the tension in my body? I'm going to work on you. I've got to be relaxed. I can't, my arm can't be tense. You know, it's kind of like a Liberace cracking his knuckles before he plays the piano. You know, you have to be loose. You have to take some time to understand how is your state today. I'm going to touch someone, then I might even transfer my energetic state to somebody else. If I'm all hyper, or I just had two cups of espresso, that's not a good time to give a Thai massage to somebody, you know?
I understand. All right. So there's something I found very intriguing in your book, and that is how the feet are used in massage. Mm-hmm. Now, I am aware vaguely of different things that people, you know, masseuses have done. They'll walk on people's backs or whatever, and I often will chuckle to myself and think to myself, it's a good thing it's not a Neanderthal that's walking on your back, because usually they're very petite women that I've seen doing this, but they know what they're doing. They're just not walking on somebody's back. They are literally manipulating with their feet, and do correct me if I'm not perceiving this rightly.
It's correct. Mm-hmm.
All right. So with this, the feet, working with the feet as a massage tool, this is something that is especially utilized in the Thai massage?
Yes, it is. And also in some forms of Indian Ayurvedic massage, there is a type of Indian massage that is done with the person lying in prone and supine position, but face down and face up, where the masseur, you know, applies pressure with his feet only and applies hot oil and hot balm to the body and rubs along the energy lines. So whether that concept came specifically from India a couple of thousand years ago into Thailand, or whether it evolved as an indigenous art form as well, it has been practiced. And there are other types of manipulation, physical manipulation with the feet in Thailand, not only traditional Thai massage. For example, there is a type of healing art in the north of Thailand from the ancient Lana kingdom, which was a different country before Bangkok, the capital in Bangkok, as you mentioned, before they grabbed that other territory and assimilated it into modern-day Thailand. There were many different healing arts. They spoke a different language up there. They had different cooking, you know, mountainous area as opposed to a flat coastal area. And there's a type of healing art called Yam Kang. And Yam Kang, what they do is they have an incense burner, a large clay pot filled with wood and charcoal. And then they have a metal flange and two or three bowls of oils. And they dip their feet into different types of oils and then put it on top of the scalding metal flange. And as a result of the contact between the heat and the oil, it sizzles and a flame comes out. And then they take their foot immediately and with their hot foot begin to slide along the back or the stomach or the legs of the person that's lying down on the mat. Now, this is not traditional Thai massage, but there are other ways in which the feet are used in many cultures around the world for massaging. Actually, they use it for exorcism, too, as you may well be aware in some cultures. Get out, spirit, and they'll stomp, you know, on your back while saying a prayer, not only in Buddhism, but many other cultures. So this idea of using the feet as a way to drive out a bad energy or to open up channels that are blocked is not new. It's been around for a really long time.
Yes, it has.
In traditional Thai massage, if I may, as you mentioned, to be clear, people are wearing clothes and light cotton clothing or rayon, something soft so you can feel the energy lines. They are lying on a comfortable mat on the floor. And the practitioner is using their feet from a distance while pressing into, for example, the lateral legs, or if the person, or into their hips, or if using their feet to support the body while they're opening gently the person's body with by holding one leg with one hand and one arm with the other hand, you know, stretching, assisted stretching, and also manipulations. Paddling techniques are done, like cat pawing techniques, kneading along the back lines, and in prone position, also working on the backs of the legs, similar to the, what you mentioned earlier about the petite Asian ladies walking on your back. I cannot do that because I'm a full-grown kind of Western guy, but I can lean my body weight in and not put both. I'm not going to put both of my feet and work on someone because I'm larger, but I've gotten some amazing massages from young, small Asian women who know how to project their body weight so well that even they might only weigh 100 pounds or so. They're giving you 90 pounds of their body weight because of the way they know how to lean in, you know, and 90 pounds of pressure, that's a lot of pressure, even for a big guy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So many of those people who don't, I like to joke that many of these women who practice, for example, in Thailand, who don't speak English very well, they know a couple of important words. And, you know, you like is good, is a good one. And too much, too much pressure, you know, and you say, okay, too much. And they laugh, you know, and then they back off some pressure. So it can be a wonderful experience. So yes, using the feet in traditional Thai massage is more a Northern Thai tradition than it is a Southern Thailand tradition.
Mm-hmm. I think your book, The Art of Thai Massage, now you have other publications that you've put out, but this one is a guide for advanced therapeutic practice. And it is loaded with all kinds of photographs showing different positions, etc. But one of the primary points of emphasis that you make in the book is that there always needs to be a respect and a very, very compassionate, caring attitude when you're working with people, because as we know, you and you've mentioned it very succinctly in the beginning of our conversation, it's a mind, body, spirit, and I like to add emotion that we are dealing with, no matter who we are, whether we're a counselor or we are dealing in, you know, healing therapies of any kind. The human being is complex, and there are so many things that can be agitating that can create dis-ease, as you so well pointed out. And this is something that you address, and this is something that is encouraged in teaching. And you go a lot more into history, and you talk about the different modalities that have eventually come into Thai massage, but Thai massage in and of itself has its own particular environment, and that is what you emphasize in these books. And I really feel that this is so eye-opening for anybody who is in any kind of energy healing, massage, you know, anything we can learn that is going to make us better at what we do, I think is important. And also, it engenders respect for cultures that have been around for thousands of years and their wisdoms and what we were able to save that had, you know, so much was destroyed, but to be able to save and to be able to put it into print, I think is significant. Now, Bob Haddad, and your last name is spelled H-A-D-D-A-D, so that's H-A-D like David, D like David, A, D like David. Now, Bob, your website is thaihealing-arts.com, thaihealing-arts.com. And you've also got the information there about what you've mentioned regarding your international organization. I'm so grateful we've had this time together. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, too. I'm also very grateful and very grateful to you for reaching out to me and to have a chance to speak to your listening audience.
It's been my pleasure. And I do hope you'll continue your writing because this material, this book is absolutely fabulous.
Thank you so much, Donna. It's been a pleasure to speak with you.
You're more than welcome. We're saying goodbye to Bob Haddad, and I'm going to be moving forward. Let's take a look and take a break. And we will be back in just a moment. Check out his website, thaihealing-arts.com. Again, Bob Haddad, H-A-D-D-A-D.